There are secrets out there, guys. Performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris Mechanic, here with an incredibly exciting and insightful guest. Our guest today has a resume like one that you've never seen before. In the early 2020s, he was SVP at GM of brand at Expedia Group. Then he moved on to LendingTree, where he was Chief Marketing and Customer Experience Officer. And now he is doing his own thing with Savvy Matters, where he's an advisor, a speaker, an author. He's got a really popular newsletter on AI, which I'm excited to hear about. And he's a member of the board of directors at United Rentals, which is really interesting. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Mr. Shiv Singh. How are you, Shiv?
Very well. Thank you for having me on, Chris. Great to be here.
My pleasure, man. You are incredibly impressive. It's like, and you know, you're fairly young, but you seem to have been very accomplished in your career. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. That's kind of you to say.
My pleasure. Yeah. And so everybody is curious, like when it comes to marketing and just career growth in general, like what is one of your biggest secrets?
Well, I don't know if I should share it, but for you and only you, Circle of Trust, I'm going to, and your millions of listeners. You know, so I grew up being the kid who was always a little different to everybody else. I had an accent that people couldn't place. I liked technology immensely, but I loved writing and I loved poetry too. I was always doing things a little different, or I was a little hard to understand or figure out. That's a strain that served me incredibly well. And what it translated into when I entered the workforce and started building my career, at first it was unintentional, and then it became a part of how I operate. And that is, when everyone would zig, I would zag. And just by consciously and unconsciously thinking about what can I do differently to stand out, whether it was for myself or my brand or the company I was working for, every day made me wake up in the morning thinking a little harder, thinking a little more imaginatively, and finding people who were also out there trying to change the world. So there's one thing, it would be zagging when everyone was zigging.
Yep. Hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision. Dig it. All right. Well, no, that is a very powerful notion. And I think it kind of underscores this idea of attention. Like you've heard about the attention economy and, you know, advertisers. It's harder now than ever to get people's attention just because of the saturation in the markets. Can you think of any examples of zagging when others are zigging?
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, there's several through the course of my career, but I'll give you one early on example and then a later one. So early on, you know, back in 2005, you know, if we were to rewind back then, Friendster, the social network, was dying. MySpace was starting to pick up, more first for music bands and then a bit more broadly. Facebook was really on not on the scene at all.
Yeah.
And I started dating a girl, and it looked like we were going to get married. And she had a PhD. She's a clinical psychologist. And I only had my undergrad degree. And I woke up one day and realized, oh my gosh, I'm like woefully undereducated. Her parents would not be impressed with me.
Yeah.
And so that night at dinner with her, I said, you know what? I'm going to go to grad school. And she was like, all right. Is that a nice way of saying we're ending the relationship? And I said, quite the opposite. It's because I want to complete my education. And we were in Boston at the time. And I said, the best school I've found to do it in is in London, at the London School of Economics. And she's like, are you sure you're not planning to break up with me? And I said, no, definitely not. And then, Chris, here's a critical piece. We started talking about why I was going back to school. And it was 28. It was a little later for compared to most folks to get their grad degree. And what was interesting was I chose to study social network theory when it was just emerging as an important discipline. It was a time in corporate America where everyone was about, you know, e-commerce and dot-com booms and web 2.2. No one was truly thinking about social media strategically and from the science behind it. So I took time off. I got my grad degree. People were surprised as to why I was getting out of the gate then. Served to incredible purposes. I came back smarter with a different perspective to my peer group. And of course, I came back sort of feeling more ready to get married and settle down. And that's what happened. And I'm happily married. And that education served me incredibly well. And it was counterintuitive to what most people thought I would consider doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So that is a very good example. And that's also an example, I guess, of being quick to the next, you know, to the next best thing, which I feel like, I mean, AI is just so overhyped right now, right? Like, it's impossible to turn on or to go on LinkedIn or to go on any media really and like not hear about AI. But I do feel like it's still early in the AI game in a lot of ways. But I'm curious, like, for people listening, suppose there's somebody like, you know, sort of in that phase where they're looking for the next thing. And sorry, this is a bit of a change of the topic. But if you were there right now and going to grad school to study something, like, what's something kind of unexpected that you might study? Or would you just be like, hey, AI, because it's still early?
So a few responses there. So first and foremost, I actually believe AI is underhyped. And we do not know what's about to hit us in the coming 3 and 5 year time horizons. And we can talk about that separately after this. In terms of if this was 2005 again, and I think that's an awesome question, what would I study? What would be my sort of zagging when everyone's zigging move? I would say I would go back to school to study psychology. And the reason for that is, yes, because when I look ahead to the next 5 years, the next decade or 2 decades out, we're going to have AI tools and AI agents doing an incredible amount for us. We're going to be working shorter hours. I think we'll finally get to that 3-day work week because there won't be enough to do. And in that world, the skills that will matter more than ever, more than any other skills out there, will be, one, how we truly relate to each other as human beings. Because our human interactions will be so special and so exclusive and of such a higher order, because I'm certainly not going to be talking to a customer service agent. I will not be going into a retail store and getting advice from a person behind a counter. I'll be doing none of that. So when I'm talking to human beings, whether it's in a work context or a personal context, it'll be higher order conversations. And the people who stand out and get business and personal benefit will be the ones who can understand the other human beings much more deeply than anyone else. That's one side to it.
Yeah.
The other side to it is, it's nearly as if in the next 5 to 10 years, the population of planet Earth is not going to double. It's not going to quadruple. It's probably grow by 100 times. But it's not going to be human beings. It's going to be all these AI agents running around. Hopefully, most, if not all of them, will be on the direction of us human beings, but there'll be a whole bunch of rogue ones too. And in that world, we'll need to understand how to communicate and interact and partner and learn from and know when to lead and when to follow the AI agents. And it's going to be figuring out the psychology of human-to-human interactions and human-to-agent interactions as well. It'll be less about the tech. That's going to be all automatic, automated. It'll be less about science, because that we can't compete with the AI. It's all going to be about these relationships.
That makes a lot of sense. So you think that in 5 to 10 years, there will be a large number of like literal AI agents, meaning like they sort of look or they take like a human like form and walk around and drive and things like that? Or are you talking about like digital agents?
All of the above. I mean, you know, the human form is incredibly advantageous in the physical world. You know, and our faculties and our hand-eye coordination, for example, allow us to do things that other mammals simply cannot do.
Yeah.
You know, our form factor works effectively for the physical world, but it obviously doesn't in a digital world or even in an augmented reality world when you think about, you know, the Apple Vision Pro. So it's going to be a combination, but we will be interacting, whether it's with voice, whether it'll be physical handshakes, whether it'll be through neural links in our minds or through our eyes or through symbols. There are going to be all kinds of human interactions going on with each other and with agents that aren't happening today.
Yeah. So it seems like you are maybe a like Elon fan, just because you mentioned like Neuralink and or is that right? Like you follow Elon Musk?
So I would say I used to for all that he was doing. And now I would say I'm a bit more of a detractor because I truly believe that as we enter this AI era, and whether you're a marketer, communicator, a product person, a writer, a poet, a musician, whatever your field may be, for us to survive and make sure that our children and our grandchildren and their children have better lives than we do, we need to make sure we're taking a people-first approach for the AI era. And I would humbly suggest that folks like Elon aren't necessarily doing that.
Yeah,
you know, there's a cool technology movement called the effective acceleration movement, which is you have to barrel into the future with technology, regardless of any collateral damage, you know, and that's typically around human beings. I don't believe in that. And that's what Elon and several others think about.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So it's really interesting, your vision. I want to get back to your secret in a second, but just humor me on this vision of like 100x the population. So I saw Tesla was creating this like robot, you know, this AI robot to work in the factories, Optimus, they call it, right?
Yeah.
So do you think in 5 to 10 years, there will be like many of those types of robots walking around like, the, you know, physically?
So I think that there are a few interesting things going on. First and foremost, there's another company out of Germany called Figure 8, I mean, or Figure 1. They've got to work on their naming, but that's another story. And they actually have the best humanoid type robots. And they're deploying them, I think it's in a GM factory in South Carolina, if I remember right. And what's super powerful about those robots is it can learn by watching what a human being does. I mean,
Oh,
just think
wow.
about that. That's mind-blowing. Because historically, we think about robots as trained to do one narrow vertical task very well, regardless of their form, whether it's a physical arm or a complete body or whatever it may be. Now you have a robot that's not just pre-programmed, but by watching you, it's able to do new tasks. It can start making coffee, it can help fix a car. I mean, you can let your imagination run wild and see the potential. It can be your tennis partner, getting better than you at tennis by watching you. So we're entering that world. Now, it's very hard to determine the time horizon because that is dependent on legislation, factory production lines, human acceptance, all kinds of other factors. But the opportunity is just right around the corner, meaning the technology is nearly ready. It's easy to scale up. And it's just going to be dependent on us human beings, what we're comfortable with and what we're not at home with. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's
You can see that in running time.
it's really a zag, right? Like you're following your own advice here, because given what you know and what you've seen and what you believe, like you believe, that AI is underhyped, that future forward it's going to go even bigger than what people think, but yet you would choose to study psychology, right? Like that's pretty counterintuitive, but I like it.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
So what's a piece of advice for a CMO or, a senior level marketer? How can, I guess, do you have a mental framework that you use to identify these zags or ideate these zags? Like, how do you think about, now you're in a marketing role, right? And it's time to zag. What is your mental thought process like at that point?
Yeah. So I believe one of the most important traits that a marketer can have is foresight, being able to see around the next corner and from the lens of your customer or your consumer. Not everyone can do that. So that's the first piece. So to be able to zag, you need to see what's coming next before anyone else does, because at the end of the day, a lot of these businesses, and I've had the privilege of working at PepsiCo, Visa, LendingTree, Expedia Group, it's a zero-sum game with your competition. And you can either win by out-innovating them or developing a brand that allows you an opportunity to do premium pricing, or by going after new segments or, creating efficiencies in your production line or your operations as a whole. A critical piece in all of those dimensions is, can you see around the next corner before anyone else, both for your business as well as for your function and your team? So that might sound all abstract, okay? So what does that translate into? So, at LendingTree, large brand, we spent around $600 million-$700 million in advertising, a lot of it in performance marketing. And we prided ourselves in being, the best performance marketers that there can be. And I was privileged and lucky to lead a dynamic and incredibly smart team. Now, however, with the perspective of being one step removed from it and writing my book and my newsletter and thinking about the future, I'm finding that over time, performance marketing is going to get increasingly commoditized. And part of my research, I'm talking to a lot of other fellow CMOs as well. And we're all coming to this conclusion. And why is it getting commoditized? It's because what's happening in Meta and in Google and in Amazon and in the ad platforms is so much more, both thanks to AI, but now generative AI specifically, is being automated.
Yeah.
You know, everything from the planning piece to the creative to the optimization. In fact, all that the marketer's left to do is put in the budget parameters and check the results occasionally. I mean, you want to do all the plumbing behind the scenes, so you have all the pass backs and the right data and all that stuff. But the actual execution of the campaigns is increasingly and completely automated, and it's performing as well as when we'd have more hands on keyboard. So if you think about that as a future coming down the pipe, then it leads to a very interesting question, which is, what should the structure of a marketing function be? What should performance marketers be doing in the future? What should the amazing agency partners, like, you know, folks like your teams, where do they add value? And so when I think about zagging versus zigging, or zagging when everyone's zigging, I think very hard about what's coming around the next corner and how quickly can you prepare for that? Because the companies and the individuals that are one step ahead in that preparation, in a sense, have an amazing arbitrage opportunity, because they will be able to, you know, I'm oversimplifying it now, but maybe the answer to performance marketing, and my friends at Google should buy me a drink for what I'm about to say, maybe the answer is everything around performance max. Just throw your budget at it and close your eyes.
Or just figure it out, right? Because there's, go ahead. Sorry.
If that's the case and that's happening, then, you know, what will quickly also happen is you'll discover that everyone else is doing that too. That commoditizes the space. So all of a sudden, as a brand or as a business, you're not getting differentiated benefit, which means you very quickly need to either put more emphasis up funnel, you know, in terms of building a richer brand, or working more mid funnel, or you need to focus on loyalty and retention, or you need to go into product innovation, but you have to shift your spends and where you're allocating time and effort. And companies that get to those realizations and move quicker and see what's around the next corner are the ones that will get the outsized benefits. So that's how I see, in a pretty fundamental way, how it translates into the world of marketing. That's one piece, but I'll pause you. You had a question.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, even though Performance Max is like somewhat of a black box, I mean, it's largely a black box. There's very few controls and things that compared to normal campaigns. There are, you know, pro tips and things that you can do really well. And honestly, it comes down to creative at the end of the day, you know? But anyway, that was just sort of a tangent into Performance Max. But you're saying basically, if we're performance marketers and we're looking around the next corner, ad management, I agree, it is largely commoditized, has been, I think, for some time. And so looking around the corner would be, for an example, would be like a performance marketer pivoting and saying, hey, you know, maybe I need to learn more about brand marketing, or maybe I need to learn more about loyalty, cross-sell, upsell, like mid-funnel stuff. Or what do you think the performance marketer of the future will be focused on?
Yeah, so definitely I think that's one piece of it. So you broaden your skill set, so you become a more well-rounded marketer.
Yeah.
And you invest in insights and then brand building and then creative and CRM in all of those pieces. That's one part of it. The other part of it is you recognize and appreciate, as long as, you know, Google and Meta and TikTok and Snap and all these platforms are around, there's going to be a massive translation exercise between them, that's a challenge too today. But your role will become less of hands-on keyboard running campaigns and more of curating where you want the spends to go, not just for the day zero ROI, but for a longer LTV value out of it. So it's a more strategic performance marketer role that you take on as well. So I see that very much happening, because no way anytime in the near future will suddenly Google, Meta, and Amazon, and TikTok, et cetera, wake up and say, we're just going to standardize the way we run advertising across all of us different platforms and make it easy for your marketer.
Right.
They don't think like that. They're not thinking that. So on the bright side, there'll always be a job for performance marketers because of that messiness in the ecosystem. But the other piece where it gets interesting too is we are going to have AI doing more on the creative front.
Yeah.
It already is. You know, you upload a product image to Amazon and it can create a whole Christmas campaign for you.
Right.
You've already reached that. And they do them pretty effectively. You know, it's impressive. It's good work. But what they don't do and are still unable to do is to help you as a human being understand which Christmas tree will create the memory. They'll help you understand which Christmas tree behind your product shot will get that immediate click through or maybe that first purchase. But they can't tell you which image will create an association that goes beyond that specific transaction. I mean, you think about it. You know, I wear Nike shoes. I wear my SBs, you know, and I love them. And it has nothing to do with any single piece of advertising I've seen online. It has to do with Michael Jordan. It has to do with design. It has to be with, you know, the fact that my son is a sneakerhead, all kinds of other reasons. So in the future, we as marketers and even performance marketers will have to invest more in having taste and an aesthetic and thinking more about the long term. And this is what takes me back to, it all comes back to psychology, because the tactics and the technical skills, which for the last 2 decades have been at a premium, I believe they won't be anymore, because guess what? That's what the AI can do better than us. And over time, much, much better than us.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely agree. And I'm planning our business pivot as you're talking. No, I'm just kidding. I agree and I don't, though, because you always need somebody to run the AI. You know, like, maybe you won't need as many people, but like, there's going to have to be somebody to, like you were saying, check, monitor, run the AI. And even in, and on the creative front too, like, or because like right now we're generating creative with AI, right? But it's not at the point where we can just post it or publish it. Are you saying that at some point it will be at the point where you can just it will autonomously like basically decide, you know, what to do next?
So there are a few things here. So first, a quick response to this last question. Yes, I think we're getting close to that. And it's really going to be a matter of whether the platforms think that serves their financial interests to enable that functionality or not. But certainly third parties, you know, the Sprinklers and the Pixuses of the world, those third-party software platforms that manage ad planning and buy and creative, they're going to have that functionality built in. It's round the corner if it's not available already. However, to your point, which I do agree with you, is this is not a black or white dilemma. It's not one extreme or the other. I fundamentally believe that it's going to be about co-piloting with the AI technology. So absolutely, we as human beings will have a very important role to play and always will. The way it translates into the marketing and agency ecosystem, just to take this conversation one step further, and I'm going to put a hypothesis out there and you're welcome to shoot it down, is that what we will probably see happen is within brands, the marketers will recognize that the deep technical pieces of running campaigns is either completely automated Or to your point, it takes really pro deeper level of expertise because you have to be talking to the AI, you know, like eye to eye. That capability won't sit in marketing in a brand. What will be just as important for the marketers to do though is to get much closer to product and to innovation, because performance marketing will be an always on, but increasingly potentially commoditized discipline. So the marketers on the client side will be more focused on the brand building, making sure that the way they see the customers is manifested in product propositions, innovations, etc. And the execution element of marketing, especially in the digital world, may return, and this is coming a full circle, may return more aggressively to the agencies who either are so deeply in bed with the platforms that they understand the way they're wired and the way they work better than anyone else, or they're the final line of defense against the AIs potentially running amok with a company's brand or with the way it spends money. So that's only one part I can see clearly happening as well. I don't know if I'm getting a bit too heady or esoteric, but...
That's okay. I like it.
It's a one. Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And it's hard to see it, you know, like we can see how quickly the AI is progressing. People, on the other hand, like, you know, aren't going to progress that quickly. I think, you know, 5-10 years from now, well, currently right now, as we speak, like enterprise, like the largest and, you know, most advanced marketers are already moving in that direction. I think it's going to take a long time for it to trickle down to, you know, the mid-market and the SMB. And the reason I say that is even with all of the, you know, the hype around AI over this past year, very few companies are, I mean, other than, you know, the largest and most advanced, like very few companies are really using it in a very meaningful way right now. You know, even despite it being everywhere and all over the news and very accessible and very inexpensive, right?
Yeah.
So I think I agree with a lot of what you're saying, definitely. I think it will probably take, 5 to 10 years to trickle down, especially to the smaller players. But yeah, no, it's an interesting thought experiment. Like, what part will not be commoditized? You know, the data, the analytics and insights portion of it, I think, is one area, but then also the AI to function effectively needs data inputs, right? Like you have to tell it or you have to feed it some direction or some idea of what you want.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is, you know, maybe it's like, and you were kind of alluding to this, but like that initial data backbone, like getting the systems, the plumbing in place, that's always going to be needed, right? But then translating, like, and as you have that data flowing, then translating it back for the AI, like, hey, this is good, this is not good. So an example would be like, you know, if you are, say that you are a SaaS company, right, and you're running Google Ads, and campaign A has a cost per lead of $50 and campaign B has a cost per lead of $100, right? But then on the back end, you know, you see the lower cost per lead campaign A, like, isn't converting well. You know, like maybe it's they have one sales meeting or two, but then, you know, those prospects tend to drop off, whereas the prospects in campaign B do much better. Like, and I get that it's feasible to, you know, to pipe that data back into the platforms, right? But most aren't doing it, or most aren't doing it well. But that's just one example of the types of data and insights that like humans might get, which AI could do if it had the access to that data. But it's like, you know, literally inputs and signals that that the AI doesn't know about.
Yeah, no, totally.
For instance, it might be like think about keyword checking, right? Like we've all had that client that like they're obsessed with like two or three different particular keyword searches, and they'll search them and be like, why aren't we showing number one for this or that? So, you know, as a marketer, you're going to respond to that and solve for that. But somebody has to get that piece of information like, hey, the CEO likes these five keywords the best. So despite the volume, despite the cost per click, despite the, you know, CPAs, like we're buying those terms all day, every day.
Yeah. No, I agree with that completely because, you know, at least into the foreseeable future, the world is going to be run by human beings. Yeah. And I hope it always is. Yeah. And being run by human beings means there's a human element to everything, which is the irrationality, the bias, the prejudice, the preference, the taste, the memory, the associations. And that translation and catering to those needs has to be human to human. So without a doubt, that'll always be a factor, always play a role, always be very important. You know where, Chris, I may, if you don't mind, disagree a little bit with you, is I actually don't think the Fortune 500s, the larger enterprise companies, are moving that fast. They're talking the talk, but they have the challenge. And I've worked in like 200-person startups, 100-person startups, as well as, you know, 200,000 employee companies. But with these larger organizations, they're dealing with a difficult human capital challenge, which is their employee bases, their employees are really struggling with AI and whether it's going to take their jobs or not. And they're very understandable and very real fears. And in some companies it's talked about, in others it's literally just one layer beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So these large organizations, because of that, are moving a lot more cautiously with how they integrate and take advantage of AI. Mm-hmm. And part of it is also copyright issues, protecting data, legislative factors, all of that stuff. This does present, I believe, a unique opportunity for the SMB space, which is you can like bring in AI in a very thoughtful way to complement what your teams do or to supercharge their work. So, you know, you run an agency, you know, in 2 days' time on Sunday at the Super Bowl, or during the Super Bowl, Microsoft is going to be advertising their Copilot. You know, they're going to be big with that. And it's all about helping you be more productive and more efficient in your work life. I'm willing to bet you'll watch that ad, unless you're already familiar with it, don't mind my presumption, and you're going to be like, you know what? This can help my teams in these 10 different ways. And tomorrow morning or next week, we're going to do a two-hour session to unpack it. And then all of a sudden, I can service my clients so much better. I can do more for less in fewer increments of time and get greater business benefit out of it. So in a sense, that too presents an arbitrage opportunity. And because you could just wake up the next day, go into work, tell your team, have that conversation, unpack it with them, you can be so much more nimble and aggressive into this. So I do believe that a lot of SMB businesses are going to fast come to that realization that, oh my gosh, this lets me compete as an enterprise company as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And there's a huge arbitrage opportunity right now just with agencies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like literally already probably half of what we do or more even is very much applicable to AI, right? Like mostly, like much of what we do is generate words and images, right?
Yeah.
So there's an arbitrage opportunity right now whereby like we can get a lot more work done. You know, we can just put out a sheer higher volume of work much, much faster than we used to be able to.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. But no, I'm not familiar with this Copilot. I'm looking at it right now. It looks really cool. How's it different than ChatGPT?
So this is the Microsoft Copilot. And you know, just 2 days ago, Google announced their new version of Google Gemini, which is their equivalent. The way to think about it is it's like ChatGPT. Well, firstly, in the case of Copilot, it's built on the OpenAI technology. So a lot of similarities. But it integrates much more aggressively into your workflow and into Microsoft Office and into the browser.
I see.
As you're using those tools and services, it's there with you by your side.
Got it. Yeah, so you don't have to copy and paste the email and then type up a prompt. It's you like highlight the text basically and can write it. That's cool though.
Yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of features that are just massive time savers. Yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, I want to be sensitive to your time here, Shiv. I know you're a very, very busy man, but tell us about what you've been up to lately. Like, I know it sounds like you're writing a book. You've got this newsletter, which is amazing. I love to follow the What You Read section because, like, there's some great articles in there. So what's your vision for yourself and your career for the next few years?
Yeah, so vision is the big word. I like to allow for serendipity and allow life to happen in both in good and sort of messy ways. But right now, I left my job to write this book because I do think what we're seeing with AI is transformative for humanity for generations to come, and it's a pivotal moment. So I'm researching and writing this book. It's on marketing with AI. It comes out in June. I have the Substack, beingsavvy.substack.com, where I share real-time insights from the book. I'm talking and researching with a whole lot of CMOs, both as inspiration and insight for the book and then more broadly. I'm advising a few companies, investing in a few. I do some public board work, as you mentioned at the start. And then I'm doing quite a bit of speaking, both conference speaking, but then also to private in private settings to corporations. And you know what it allows me to do, Chris, all of this?
What's that?
It allows me to be a better dad and a better husband than I've ever been because I own my time.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. No, that's awesome. It sounds like you own your time. You control what you do during that time, and you're focused on things that you're passionate about and feel are, you know, important and impactful for the future, which I definitely agree with. So that's awesome, man. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I have learned a lot here today. I want to talk to you for like 4 more hours because I can tell that you're like, you see things. I think you have a better ability to see around corners than I do, basically. So I'm interested to keep talking. I've learned a ton. I've enjoyed it. For everybody listening, if you learned a lot or learned anything or would like to hear more, drop us a like, a comment, or a review wherever you get your pods. We really appreciate that. And Shiv, for folks that want to learn more about you, where would you direct them to?
Yeah. So firstly, wonderful talking to you. Yeah. It was thought-provoking, and I feel the conversation was much better than any number of coffees I could have because it's about thoughts. In terms of where I can be reached, first and foremost, just to emphasize my Substack, beingsavvy.substack.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on X. I still want to say Twitter.
Right.
It's weird to say X. And my email address is shiv@savvymatters.com. So feel free to ping me if there's something you agree with in what I said or something you thought was totally crazy.
That's interesting. Perfect. Yeah, and we'll definitely include all those links in the show notes, as well as links to some of the other things we spoke about, like Copilot. I did find the figure company, the humanoids from Germany, which we'll link to as well. But and stay on the line for just one more minute, Shiv. But for everybody else, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO, and we will see you next time. And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours. Even if you're already a client, if you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google ads, LinkedIn ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.